Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 322 called Kristen Duncan. This episode is sponsored by Embryo Solution. Guys, have you ever heard of embryo donation? I've been getting asked a lot about this lately, so I wanted to share some really important information. Embryo donation is when one family that's gone through IVF donates their embryos to support the family building efforts of another family. And I've partnered with Embryo Solution, an agency with an important mission to fill the gap between infertility and excess embryos by connecting all parties involved. Embryo donation costs approximately 30% less than traditional IVF. Embryo Solution is an inclusive agency working with single parents, couples in committed relationships, LGBTQ families, and more. With Embryo Solution, you're able to choose between an anonymous and an open relationship with the donor family. Plus, Embryo Solution ships the embryos to the clinic of your choice. So whether you're looking to build your family or you've gone through IVF and you have embryos in storage that you're not sure what to do with, Embryo Solution can help. They've got a team of experts at the ready to help you navigate whatever scenario you're going through. So to find out more, go to embryosolution.com. Again, that's embryosolution.com. Thanks, Embryo Solution. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, B-E-L-I-B-A-B-Y, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly. Okay, before we start with Kristen's episode, I just wanted to remind everybody that Fertility Rally is the space I wish I had when I was going through all my infertility shit. We have 4 to 5 support groups per week. We have 3 private Facebook groups. We have hundreds of members going through all the things. So if you are currently going through an infertility journey, building your family through ART, come and join us. We are happy to support you. My co-founder Blair and I, it's our life's mission to support you guys and make this easier for you. So check us out at fertilityrally.com or on Instagram at fertilityrally. You're welcome to check out a group and see if it's your jam and go from there. So come find us. We are happy to support you. Also, we are coming up on National Infertility Awareness Week and Mother's Day, and it is a great time to check out my book about IVF and ART called Work of Art. It's on my website at infertileafgroup.com, so you can find out more there. You can purchase it. You can get a personalized copy or not. You can also find out more on my Instagram at infertileafstories. Again, it's called Work of Art, and you can find it at infertileafgroup.com. Thanks. All right. So my guest today, Kristen Duncan, is just awesome. She is a single mother by choice, and she is a big part of that community. She has a big presence on Instagram, and she's also one of those people, again, that just wants to normalize the conversation about all the different ways to build a family. So Kristen's going to tell us her story today, which includes silent endo, IVF, having a sperm donor choosing party with her sisters, and so much more. So without further ado, this is Kristen's infertility story. Hi, Kristen. It's so nice to meet you. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to share my story.
Absolutely. So I know that you do listen to the podcast, and I appreciate that. So you probably know what I'm going to start with, which is, have you always wanted to be a parent?
Yes. And I definitely have always wanted to be a mom. I grew up in a big family with 4 kids. I have 3 sisters, all younger than me. And I think all of us kind of always wanted to recreate that big family. So I always thought I'd have three or four kids. That was when I thought I would be doing it with a partner, of course. And yeah, I became a teacher and I like working with kids. I've always babysat and, you know, done all those things. So I definitely always wanted to be a mom.
Okay. So what did you learn growing up about fertility and pregnancy and having babies and all that stuff?
Oh gosh, nothing. I do remember we had sex ed at school. I can't remember what grade it would have been, but it was very basic of just like how the body works. I don't think we even learned about things like ovulation or things that become important later on when you are dealing with fertility and trying to get pregnant. So I definitely did not know much other than, you know, make sure you don't get pregnant until you want to. That was the main message.
Mm-hmm. All right. So walk us through your fertility journey. Like, when did you start, you know, starting to try and what did you find out? How did it go? All those things.
Sure. So I was 34 right before COVID hit and I was single at the time. I was living with a single girlfriend and both of us decided in January of 2020 that we were so sick of dating apps. We've been both doing it for several years and we were like, you know what? This year we're going to go out and we're going to meet people in person. Like we're going to
IRL dating. That's crazy.
We're going to go to the bar. We're going to be sociable. We're going to like meet real people and get off these dating apps. Well, of course, 2 months later, COVID hits and starts. And so that just kind of flipped my world upside down. And I thought, you know, even if I meet someone tomorrow, which is now very, very unlikely, I'm 34. I wanted to have kids yesterday, like so long ago. I watched a couple of my younger sisters start their families and they already had like two or three kids by that time. And I was so ready to be a mom, but now this pandemic was holding me back. And so at that point I was like, you know, if I'm going to have to wait to meet someone and then wait a couple of years before we get married and then maybe wait before we start having kids, I'm just not willing to do that anymore. Like I'm already mid 30s. And plus I found that even before the pandemic, the men that I was dating, it was a lot of like men that were divorced with two kids and were already done and didn't want any more kids or the like kind of immature, doesn't really have their life together yet, 30 to 40 year old that's still like, yeah, I think I want kids, but like, I don't want anything serious yet.
Right.
Like, what am I supposed to do with that?
Absolutely.
So there were just a lot of like bad dating opportunities. The pandemic really kind of sealed the deal for me in terms of like, well, maybe I should just do this on my own. So
yeah,
that started exploring that idea.
So was that coming to that decision? Did you have anybody in your life that had done something like that before?
No. In fact, it's kind of funny to think back on it because I thought this was like my idea. Like I was the first one to ever think of doing this on my own. That no one had ever done this before, but like I was going to have a baby by myself somehow. But then when I started looking into it, I realized there was actually a whole community of women on Instagram that had done this. There were adult children of women who had done this a long time ago, which I think is so, so brave to have done it in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
When no one was really doing it.
It's like progressive and cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I found that there's a whole single mother by choice forum and a book that went with it. So I started reading all the books, devouring all the content that I could just to kind of see what it was like for those women.
And what kinds of things were you learning from the people that had been going through it or had gone through it?
I think what was interesting is that in the single mother by choice community, you don't find a lot of people that regret going ahead and having a baby on their own. So I think when you're first coming into it, you think, oh, it must be so hard and their lives must be so terrible and it must just be really, really stressful. And yes, there are those factors, but I think the most surprising thing was just that everyone was so happy with their decision.
Yeah. Actually, my next book is about a single mother by choice. Best friends, Helen, my next children's book. And that's how the whole story kind of starts to unfold and things.
Wow.
There's some twists and turns along the way, but that's
so
the premise of it. She did IUI and had my godson, Jack.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, in the name of just normalizing that, you know, and talking about all the different beautiful ways that families are created, you know.
Yeah, I honestly still find it surprising when people find me on social media and sometimes comment like, I've never seen anyone do this before. I'm like, what? Everyone's doing this. But it's just
a little
community on Instagram now. Of course, I'm connected to all those other women that are doing it.
Right.
But the majority of people out there in the world don't necessarily know someone personally that is mother by choice.
Yeah. So going back to the people that you met specifically, Kristen, what were some of the things, like, can you think of any advice that you got from people before you kind of embarked on the journey, or like pieces of wisdom for people that had done it before you?
I don't think there was anything in particular that stands out to me. That was 4-ish years ago. So it was a while ago. And I think I was so set on doing this on my own at that point that it probably wouldn't have mattered what those people said. I had kind of joked about it to my family and friends for a few years, saying, well, if I don't find someone, I'm just going to do this on my own. And I didn't really know what the process was or how you find donor sperm or any of that.
Right.
I just thought, you know, I'll figure it out when I'm ready to get to that point.
Yeah. And what was the reaction from your family?
I think because I've been commenting about it for so long, no one was really surprised. I had a really good reaction from most of my friends, my family. Everyone was supportive. I think everyone in my life knew how badly I wanted kids, and they wanted that for me. And so they saw, you know, she's been dating, she's dated these terrible guys. My family especially knew what I'd been through in terms of like the guys that I would pick and the guys that I would date weren't the greatest. And so they were like, well, maybe this is better. And I think my mom as well was getting to an age where she was seeing a lot of her friends' kids get divorced, and they would talk about that, and she would hear what their kids were going through in terms of like sharing custody and all the hard parts of that. So I think when she saw me going down this path, she was like, you know, this isn't so bad. Like, this might be okay. My dad was a little more skeptical, but he kind of kept that to himself. I don't think he was as sure that this was the best path. He wanted me to go the traditional route and find a partner to do it with. But he really came around once I had my baby, and they're the best of friends now. So
yes, that's beautiful. I mean, I think on one hand, you know, being in a marriage for a long time, you know, one of the things that Vince and I argue about a lot is parenting and the different styles that we have and the different, you know, choices that we make. So on one hand, I feel like not having to do that with somebody.
I actually tell people that my life is so peaceful. Like there's no arguing about like the house stuff and the chores.
Totally.
Who's doing what? It's just, I'm doing everything. Yeah, it's a lot.
Right. Like, it is a lot. And I don't want to demean that at all. That
there's no resentment of like, oh, I wish Blake would have taken out the garbage. Like, oh, I know that like, that's my job. And if I don't feel like doing the dishes, no one's going to get mad. So it's really just very nice and peaceful. It's a nice life.
So before we get into what happened next, I want to ask you about terminology. I interviewed someone recently or a little while ago who preferred the term solo mom by choice. Do you have a preference in terms of how people describe it?
Yeah, I would say I don't really have a preference. I think when I first came across the idea, it was always called single motherhood by choice, single mom by choice. And so that's just what I went with and just kind of got used to it. And then I started growing my platform on Instagram as I shared my journey. And so I just kind of got into using it in that way. But once I heard other single moms by choice talking about the difference, like you said, between, you know, single more describes your relationship status and solos, like I'm doing it on my own. I actually kind of prefer solo mom by choice, but I just don't use it now because I already had used it for so long as single mom by choice. So now I feel like I'm just stuck on that technology. But I totally think either way is great, and whatever you prefer to describe yourself as. And I think the adding by choice at the end is really the part that communicates to people, you know, that this was a purposeful decision that I made this alone. So I think either way, you're still getting the message across. So it doesn't really matter which one you prefer to use.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so tell me what happened when you started down the path. What did you do first?
It was interesting because I had never tried to get pregnant before and obviously didn't have a partner. So when I went in to get my fertility checked, I was 110% sure that my fertility was going to be great because my family had lots of kids in it. You know, my mom's family had 8 kids. My mom had 4 kids. No real fertility issues for anyone that I knew of. My sisters never had issues. My mom, I think, had a couple of miscarriages, but they were spread far apart. They weren't like repetitive losses in a row. Not that that makes it any easier, but I think in my head, it was, you know, my family's fertility is fine, therefore mine is too. But I was 34. And when I went in to get my first ultrasound, they only found 2 follicles on the antral follicle count scan. And there was also a really big dermoid cyst on one ovary. And this was, so this would have been December of 2020. So right before or right after COVID. So everything was backed up in terms of appointments, getting in with a doctor. So it took me 3 months after my first ultrasound to get a follow-up appointment with my doctor. And I had this terrible doctor at the time who retired shortly afterwards, but she got me on the phone. So this is now March 2021. And I had heard that there was some sort of cyst found, but other than that, I didn't really know what the results were. So I just waited those 3 months thinking like, it'll be fine, whatever. And she got me on the phone and she's like, your fertility is terrible. You may not be able to have children. You have this big cyst. You probably need surgery.
Oh my God, harsh. Did she use those words?
I don't remember exactly what she said now. I do remember at one point, once we started to do IUIs, she said something about the fertility medication. And I was like, oh, so is there a risk of twins? And she kind of laughed and she's like, you'll be lucky to have one baby.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So she was pretty terrible. So at that first appointment, I was just completely shocked. I didn't really believe it at first. Like, I think I was in denial for a really long time, even up to when I started doing IVF. I was like, I'm going to surprise them with how good of results I have. Because like, they must have messed up my results or something.
Yeah.
So we decided to start by getting the cyst removed. So in June of 2021, I went and had a laparoscopic surgery. They took the cyst out. There was no issues with that. But then they discovered that I actually had stage 2 endometriosis as well, which was also shocking because I had none of the symptoms. So it was silent endo. Mm. I had no like painful cramps or painful periods. I'd never like miss school or work because of a period.
Right.
I felt like I had no symptoms of this. So it was another way that I was just blindsided of like,
right. How did it feel to get that diagnosis?
It was crazy. And like, in a way, it was good because I knew going forward, and it's really hard to get diagnosed with endometriosis for a lot of people. So in a way, it was good that I'd had the surgery and that I knew exactly what I was dealing with, but it was just so shocking. Like, I just thought, isn't it just like, if your family has no trouble having kids, then you won't either? But come to find out down the road that like two of my sisters dealt with painful periods. My mom and my aunt both had an ablation later in life. So probably they had endometriosis or something and had painful heavy periods as well. But nobody talked about it then and nobody was diagnosed then. So that information did not get passed on.
Right. That's why I think it's so important to talk about this stuff, obviously, so as we are, you know, it's just.
And I think it's so important for people to know that just because your family history is good, that doesn't mean that your fertility is automatically fine.
Right.
Your individual situation can be so different from your sister's.
Absolutely. Yes. So what happened next?
So I got the surgery, found out about the endometriosis, and then I decided to start with IUIs. So I had to find a sperm donor first.
Okay.
And I had an idea that I was a carrier of something because my sister had done 23andMe and she came back as a carrier of this one thing. And so I was like, oh, I probably have it too. And it wasn't like on the standard genetic carrier screen. So I had them add it on to mine and I did the genetic carrier screening so that I could pick a donor specifically that didn't carry what I carried.
Can you say what it was or do you not want to?
It's just that I don't remember the full name. It's Alpha 1 something.
Okay.
It was just something that wasn't on the standard test. So I just asked for it to be added. But then it really ended up influencing my choice of sperm donors because a lot of the sperm banks just do like the standard test on their donors. And I didn't want my donor to not be tested for that.
Okay.
So I ended up going with Seattle Sperm Bank specifically because they tested their donors for that gene.
Okay. So what happens if you have that gene? Like what could be the result? Not a healthy embryo?
It's the same as a lot of them. It would be a disease. So I think it was the disease to do with the lungs. And it was like the child would have a 25% chance of getting the disease. So they'd have to inherit a copy of the mutated gene from me and then the same mutation from the sperm donor.
Got it.
So that's why just by picking a sperm donor that tested negative for it, then you don't pass it on, right?
Got it. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I went to Seattle Sperm Bank, started looking through profiles, and I live in Canada. So that actually narrowed down sperm donors a lot more. In Canada, you can't donate sperm, eggs, anything for money. So we don't have a lot of sperm donors in Canada. So everyone pretty much goes to the States to get sperm or eggs sometimes.
Okay.
So, and then we also have heavier restrictions on what you can import. So you can't just import any donor you want in the US. It has to be a donor that meets Health Canada's restrictions.
Wow.
So that narrows it down again further. So like Seattle Sperm Bank has their US site and they have their Canadian site and they have fewer donors on the Canadian site.
Oh, so interesting.
Okay. Filters them so that you can only look at the ones that are actually available in Canada.
Got it.
So when I was picking, I think I put in Caucasian and then I don't even know if I put anything else. That might've been it. Plus the alpha one thing that I wanted them to be tested negative for.
Right.
And I think I only had like 24 sperm donors to pick.
Wow.
From.
Okay.
So it was very small. It was kind of nice because it felt kind of overwhelming to like go through all of the different banks and all of the donors. Mm-hmm. So this way it was like narrowed down, but for a good health reason that I felt good about. And I liked Seattle Sperm Bank because they didn't have adult photos. I was so sick at that point of like dating online and swiping through men's photos.
Right.
I just felt like if I had to go through adult photos for a sperm donor, that it would be more of the same.
Okay. Got
so
it.
They had baby photos, like cute photos of them as a kid or as a baby. And then they also had an audio interview. So you could actually listen to the donor's voice answer.
Oh, that's cool.
So cool. And the interviews are quite well done, I think.
Yeah. What were some of the questions they asked them?
Yeah. So they would just ask them like standard questions about things that they liked, but then they would also ask them like, why did you want to be a donor? And at the very end of every interview, they would ask them, is there anything that you'd like to say to the intended parents or the recipient parents right now? And so then they would leave you with a little bit of a message. So you could kind of get a sense of like, what kind of person are they? What do they sound like?
I like that.
Yeah, it was really nice. So I based it kind of more off of that and the profile than the photos. I actually ended up having a sperm donor choosing party with some of my sisters.
Okay.
I remember we were sitting in the basement at my sister's house and we put the pictures up on the screen for the profiles and we would listen to every single audio interview and we had a rating system with like stars. So we would be
two stars
or three stars. And I remember just listening to one audio interview and was like, oh, too Russian. And my sister would like write down everything that I said, like, just for silly reasons, if we got rid of some of them or some to the top.
How many did you start with before you narrowed it down?
I think it was maybe like 23 or 24. So I think we just
went through all of them.
Yeah. And so we would narrow some of them down quickly of like, no, get rid of that one. But we kept track. So by the end, I had a solid list of about 10 donors. Okay. Because at that point also, the annoying thing about the Canadian site is it doesn't actually tell you who's available as a donor like right then. So you have to send a list, at least at the time. I had to send a list by email to the sperm bank and just say, here's my top 10. And then they got back to me and said, you know, these donors are not coming back. These ones I think might be back soon. So then I had a better idea of like, okay, maybe it's going to be these ones. And then not long after that, maybe a few weeks later, they had two donors from my list come into stock at the same time. And so then I had to go back to my list and decide between those two, which vials I actually wanted to purchase.
Okay. So how did you ultimately decide?
I just went through the profiles again. And honestly, it was like little silly things. Like the donor I ended up picking minored in Spanish and I'm a Spanish teacher. So I was like, oh, maybe he's got that, you know, that same ability that he's good at languages.
Totally.
He was going to be a professor of archaeology or something. It seemed like was his plan. So I was like, he seems smart. Just a couple of little details like that I was like, because at that point I wasn't picking based on like, I didn't really care what he looked like. My family all looks a lot like each other. We all really resemble each other strongly.
Yeah.
So I kind of figured my genes would be pretty strong in that regard.
Okay.
So I wasn't too worried about like brown hair or blonde hair or blue hair or whatever. I just wanted, what I really wanted was someone that was an open ID donor. So he was, that means that at 18, my child would get his contact information.
Okay.
And I really wanted someone that I thought sounded like a good human being and that my child would have a good experience if they ever met this person in the future. It's funny because I think once you have a child with a donor, you start to romanticize the idea of them. I've talked about this with another friend of mine that's a single mom by choice. And we both kind of said that like, you start thinking like, well, I picked the smartest donor and the most handsome donor and like, wow, what a good choice. choice I made, but it's just because your child is amazing and you love your child. Right. And so you start to think like, oh, that must have been such a good choice. Like if I would have picked someone else, it wouldn't have been as good.
But interesting. It's just because
you love your child so much.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So now I don't remember what's real and what's just like romanticized in my head about
this. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay. So then what happens once you pick the donor?
So pick the donor, had the vial shipped. It's quite a process in Canada because it has to be imported by this Canadian importer. And so it goes from the sperm bank to them and then gets shipped to my clinic. And so then my clinic let me know that they had the vials. I think I bought two the first time because I was thinking I was going to do IUIs. And I knew even then that I definitely wanted more than one child. So in my head, as soon as I bought those two vials, that was kind of what I could afford at the time. But I was like, I'm probably going to need more because mm-hmm. even if this works right away, I want to use the same donor for my next child.
Do you remember, Kristen, how much it cost, or do you mind sharing that?
Just so people. So it's actually crazy because after this, prices skyrocketed. So this was in 2021 in April, and I paid $800 for a vial from Sperm Bank.
And what is it now?
Now I just heard, so I just had a coaching call with a single mom by choice to be, and she said she paid $2,160
for vial.
Yeah.
Damn.
So that's from 2021 to 2025.
Damn. Okay.
Prices are just insane. So yeah, so I just had the two vials shipped, and then right away I put my name on the wait list for the next time he had vials available. So that was really smart because then when his name came up again, I bought four more vials, and then that was kind of all that I needed at that point. So I got the vials. I started IUIs after my surgery, after I'd recovered for a month or so. So this would have been in like August, September. I kind of did two IUIs back to back. First one didn't work, which was surprising and not surprising. Like, I don't think my doctors were surprised. I was still at the point where I was like, ah, oh, but I'm sure my fertility is not as bad as they say, and they're being dramatic about it. And so I'm sure the second one will work. So we did the second IUI. What's interesting about my clinic is they didn't do ultrasound monitoring at all. They didn't offer it to me. I didn't know that it was an option, but I was medicated because my numbers, like my AMH was really low, and just because of my low follicle numbers, like I'd only had those two follicles. So they weren't too worried about over-medicating me and me getting too many follicles in the IUI. So I did the second one, and the second one failed. And I had already had a conversation with my doctor about like, okay, let's do one more IUI. And then I think I had switched doctors at this point, actually. So I'd said, let's do one more IUI and then I'll maybe switch to IVF. So she'd put in my file all the orders and stuff that needed to be there in order to do IVF. But then instead of doing a third IUI, I had literally already started taking the letrozole. And I was like, you know what? This is silly. I just want to do IVF. Like, I know I want more than one kid. So even if I get pregnant now, this isn't going to be great because I won't be able to have a second. So I thought, I'll do IVF. And like, I'm going to have great results because, again, in denial. And at some of the scans, I had more follicles. So I thought maybe there was a chance with IVF medications I could get more.
This episode is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news? We don't have to suffer through any of it anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. In fact, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are more than 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. Okay, guys, so here is the very exciting news. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code INFERTILEF at checkout. Again, that's happymammoth.com and use the code INFERTILEF for 15% off. Thanks, Happy Mammoth.
So is the hope that you would bank a bunch of embryos?
That was the hope.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I could just, you know, bank the embryos and then have them for future use.
Right. Okay.
It would be better than just doing an IUI. Because by that
makes sense.
I was 35. or almost 35, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Actually, maybe I was almost 36 by then. Yeah, I was almost 36.
Okay.
So this is like September, October. So they let me switch to start doing IVF. So I started injections and all the things. And I ended up getting to the point in my cycle where they started talking about canceling. So I only had, I think, maybe 3 or 4 follicles visible.
Okay.
And anything under 3, they start to say, maybe you should cancel. But my doctor was also like, you know, we don't know that you're going to have better results next time. Mm. And since I had spent so much money on the medications and there would have been like a huge cancellation fee, at that point, I was just like, you know what, let's just do this. Like, I really think there's no point in canceling because I don't know if I can get better results. So gotcha. That was my thought process there.
Okay.
So we went ahead, we did the egg retrieval. My doctor told me later that she thought I would maybe get like 4 to 6 eggs just because there were some smaller ones and stuff. But I ended up having some empty follicles that didn't have eggs in them. And they didn't really explain why that happened. Mm-hmm. So I only retrieved 2 eggs.
Okay.
Which was obviously devastating after you spent that time and that money.
All that money and all that time.
Yeah. And then I was like, is this even better than an IUI? Like, I could have spent $1,000 instead of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
Right. Oh gosh. So when you,
that was devastating.
When you get that number, like what do you feel?
Oh gosh, just, I was heartbroken. Mm. And I had people who said like, oh, at least it's 2 and not 1. And I was just like, it's 2. Like, and I already knew, I was very into like learning about IVF. So I already knew how bad that number was because I knew that it would go down at each stage. Mm-hmm. So in my head, getting 2 was like getting nothing because probably I was going to lose them at some stage.
That attrition rate. Yeah, of course.
So that was devastating. And then the next day I got the call that only one of those 2 eggs had fertilized. So one of them didn't fertilize. So then I'm even like more devastated and this is never going to work. I start thinking about like, I guess we're doing another round of IVF and start kind of planning that and talking about that. And that was kind of the day that they were like, you know, you should just transfer this embryo. And in my head, I was like, oh, but shouldn't I be, you know, banking frozen embryos? Shouldn't I do multiple cycles? And they're like, this might be your only shot at a baby. Like, you just want to transfer.
Okay.
But they were really strongly encouraging me to do a 3-day fresh transfer, a day 3 fresh transfer of this one little embryo that I had, if it made it. Because at this point, it was still, you know, day 1 where we knew that it fertilized. And that
was so you've got the sperm donor and you've got your egg and then you're going to make this embryo. Okay.
Yeah. So we knew that it fertilized. I hadn't even like picked up the medications from the pharmacy for a transfer because that wasn't the plan. And so I'm like rushing on a Sunday to try and get all the medications. All the pharmacies are closed. So I'm trying to figure that out. Eventually end up getting all the medications I need. And 2 days later, I think they called me in the morning and said, yeah, transfer's a go. Like, it's looking really good.
Oh my God. Exciting.
Like each day the embryo divides and you get more and more cells. And so by day 3, it was an 8 cell, which they were like, that's perfect. That's exactly what we're looking for. So come in for your transfer.
Wow.
So I went in and it was like the most magical experience ever, like watching on the screen them put that tiny little embryo. You just see like this little blob of white on the screen and they're like, yeah, it's in your uterus. You're good. And you're like, I could be pregnant. Like, this is crazy. And of course, this is the first time that I really felt like, okay, there's actually a chance I could be pregnant. Cause with IUI, you just don't know.
Right. Right.
It's not as visible of a procedure, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So I was super excited and I started to feel kind of hopeful. I just ended up working the rest of that week. And then on the Saturday, this is right before my like November break that I get, I'm a teacher. So I had a week off and I was like, well, I'm going to Palm Springs to visit my parents.
Yeah.
And my doctor was very encouraging about like, don't worry, just like relax, have fun in the sun. You can go in the pool. Like, she kind of just reassured me that everything was fine. So I played pickleball that week and went swimming and suntanning and did all the things that you're probably not supposed to do after an IVF transfer.
Well, had you thought about early testing at all or no?
So I didn't because it was too early before I left. And then I was with my parents all week and I had actually kind of fooled them and said that I froze my embryo because I didn't want them to know
Got it.
That it could work. And I guess I didn't want to get their hopes up. So I told them I'd frozen it. So they just thought, oh, okay, she's doing another round of IVF in like January. And they didn't know there was a chance. So I didn't bring any pregnancy tests with me down to Palm Springs.
Okay.
And I was with my mom the entire time. Like she would, I would say, okay, I'm going to the grocery store. And she'd be like, oh, I'll come with you. So I had no opportunity to even buy a pregnancy test if I even wanted to. So I kind of put it out of my mind for the week a little bit.
You're like, damn it, I was going to get one and sneak into the bathroom. Right.
Yeah. So I had no chance. So literally come home from Palm Springs, a week of like relaxation and fun in the sun. And it's like 11 o'clock at night. And I'm like, oh, I should wait till tomorrow morning to test. Cause like you're supposed to test with the first morning urine. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. I'm not waiting. So I went and I took the test and I like set my timer because I wanted to make sure it was exactly the right amount of time before I checked the test. And I just remember flipping it over and seeing that positive line. And I just could not stop saying, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, over and over again.
Crazy. I just got the full body chills.
Oh,
crazy.
Yeah, it was the best.
Oh my God. Okay. So then what?
So then I had a great pregnancy. I worked out all throughout my pregnancy, was very active and was really lucky that everything just went smoothly. Got to kind of like near the end and started having a bit of rib pain was all. I didn't have a lot of like morning sickness or anything. So it all just was great. And I loved
what happened when you told your parents, like I was pregnant in Palm Springs.
That was quite a moment. So I actually waited till Christmas because then I was more like 10 or 11 weeks. So I had the ultrasound with the heartbeat, which was amazing. Oh. And then I told a couple of friends before that, but my parents weren't home from Palm Springs until almost Christmas anyways. So I just waited a couple more weeks and I had my nieces unwrap a gift that was like a little baby outfit that said new to the crew, like the cousin crew.
Cute.
And so I kind of set up my camera in the background, my phone to record, and then had them unwrapping this gift and they opened it. And I think the kids were kind of confused and thought it was for like one of the little cousins or something.
Right.
And
the American Girl doll.
Yeah. My sister just looked at me and like started screaming and like, you're pregnant. You're pregnant. And then everybody else caught on. So it was just a whole family like
so fun.
Losing their minds. It was amazing. Yeah.
So going through the pregnancy, you know, we did talk about single mom by choice. Obviously, did you have any difficulties, you know, doing it on your own? Did you ever wish, oh, I wish I had a partner at this point or that point?
That's a great question, because I think once I got pregnant, I kept thinking, you know, eventually this is going to hit me that I'm doing this on my own and I'm going to probably have like a breakdown and I'm going to cry and I'm going to. But at that point, I was just so happy to be pregnant. Like I thought, maybe I wasn't going to get to be a mom. Maybe I was never going to have this opportunity. And then here I was carrying this like healthy, miraculous pregnancy, my only embryo, my only egg.
Beautiful.
And so I was just so happy that it never happened. I mean, obviously, if you have a harder pregnancy, then maybe that's where it kind of sinks in that you're doing this on your own or you have like some symptoms or, you know, if you're constantly sick and you're having a hard time taking care of yourself, then would have hit me a bit harder. But because I was just so lucky and had this great pregnancy, I really got to the end of it just being so happy.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about what happened after that.
So I had my best friend be the person that came into the delivery room with me. I was a little nervous about like not having a partner and how that would go. But I was lucky because I was exactly 38 weeks. And I remember talking to my best friend that morning and being like, I'm going to be one of those people that goes to like 41 weeks with the first baby because first babies are always late. And she's like, well, do you feel anything? And I was like, no, I don't. Like, I just feel normal. And I think I took a nap that morning because I was like, oh, I just don't feel like working out today. And when I woke up, my water broke. So,
oh, wow.
2 weeks early. So I was not prepared. I knew he was fairly big because we had a couple ultrasounds and they were a little concerned that like he was fairly large.
Okay. So when did you find out it was a boy? Or did you know with the embryo?
No. So we can't find out in Canada before, and I didn't do PGT testing or anything, but I found out with the NIPT test at like 10 weeks.
Okay.
So I knew pretty early and I did like a little gender reveal with my family.
Gotcha.
So then, yeah, the day that my water broke, I didn't start having contractions that I could feel right away, but I went to the midwife and she was like, you are having contractions. It might progress by tomorrow. If not, like we'll see about some natural induction methods. Like she had a smoothie that she was going to give me that would help progress the labor or something. Mm-hmm. So we waited until the next day. And at like 1:30 in the morning that night is when I started having contractions. So I was kind of awake all night. And I called my best friend at like 3 in the morning and she drove up. She lives like an hour and a half outside the city. So she drove up and she's a nurse. So she's actually delivered lots of babies, which was great. And she just came to my house. And then we said we'd call the midwife when we thought it got far enough progressed that they could come and check us. So it was like 7:30 in the morning on a Monday. And she kind of thought, we don't have time for the midwives to come all the way here now. Like it's going to progress quickly. And the hospital was like a half an hour drive away. So we just kind of had to leave. She thought it was better that we just get to the hospital and meet the midwives there. And I was really lucky that I was able to have like an unmedicated birth. I delivered him in a pool, a birth pool at the hospital. Wow. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds. I got to be at the hospital, but also got the birth pool and the midwife that I wanted. And, you know, it was hard, but it was like the labor that I wanted and the birth that I wanted. So I got really lucky that way.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So tell me where you are with things now and how old is he?
Yeah. So Blake is 2.5 and I have absolutely loved being a mom, loved every stage of it. I mean, toddlers are hard, but
yeah,
and they're frustrating. But basically when he was about 13 months, I went back to work full time. So teaching full time. And that was very crazy and hard.
You said you're a Spanish teacher?
Yeah. What, I teach middle school.
Middle school? Oh, that's awesome.
So now grade 7 and 8. And, you know, it was a big adjustment with him going back to daycare and me working full time. But we made it through. We made it through all those first year sicknesses at daycare, him getting sick all the time. And, and then I started IVF again right away because I knew that I wanted a second. So I was working full time, had a baby in daycare as a single mom, and was doing IVF at the same time.
Okay. With the same donor that you had purchased all the vials, right?
I had some of those extra vials. And I realized at that point that they were able to split the vials in half for IVF, which I didn't know before. I thought that you had to use a whole vial. So my doctor was able to just use half, which was good because I ended up doing about 6 rounds of IVF.
Wow. That is a lot. A lot on your body, a lot on your wallet.
Yes. Yeah. I gained a lot of weight, like 40 pounds, and it was insanely expensive. And I just every time kept going because I thought, you know, I got so lucky with that one egg. That's all it takes. Like, I just need to keep going until I get one more. And that just kept not happening. So I kept going and I was super determined. And then eventually I had a last round where I got 3 day 3 embryos. And I thought, this is so promising. Like, this is an amazing number. I've never had this many in one round. And so I decided to do like a kitchen sink protocol. We suppressed for my endo for 2 months before. We did like all the things that we possibly do, did extra progesterone. And when that transfer still didn't work, that's kind of when I realized that it was time to move on.
Okay. So let's talk about all those disappointments after, you know, having gotten, I hate to use the word lucky, but there is some luck involved. I feel of this stuff, you know, so the first time having it with the one egg, with the one embryo, with the one, you know, and it did work. And I'm similar, you know, I had a one embryo, one transfer and it did work. So I do realize how rare that is now that I've met so many people that, you know, that's not normally the case. Yeah. So I feel extraordinarily lucky. But having had that as your first experience and then all the disappointments, how did you navigate all that? That's like a real mind fuck, right?
It's really hard. Like, I think I just kept thinking, well, what's my next step? What's my backup plan? And what's my next step? So every time I would have like a failed transfer, it was, okay, we're going into the next round of IVF or okay, we're moving on to like this new protocol. I did some rounds of ovarian PRP, hoping that that would help. And I did have better results afterwards, but it didn't seem to be getting me normal embryos or it wasn't working to get me pregnant. So I just kind of kept moving on to the next step every time I would have a failure.
Okay. So when you said next steps after that final time it didn't work, what did that look like?
Yeah. So I'd had a friend maybe around round 5 who reached out and said, you know, if you're ever looking for an egg donor, I'd love to donate eggs to you. She was kind of like an acquaintance. She was young. She was like 25 and she lived in the city and was open to having a relationship with the child in the future, just contact. And so she seemed like kind of the perfect person to be an egg donor. So I decided to kind of take that route with a known egg donor. And I was still at that point going down to the States for treatment. I'd switched from my clinic in Canada at about round 6 and 7 I did in the States.
Okay.
So I was still going to go down there for the egg donor round. And we did a bunch of testing. And unfortunately, her genetic testing results came back that she was a carrier of a few things, including one that was like an X chromosome linked condition. Mm. So the child would actually have a 50% chance of having the disease if it was a boy, and a 50% chance of being a carrier of the same disease if it was a girl. So at that point, I had to kind of reevaluate and decide if it was worth using that donor, because it would have been an extra maybe $10,000 to do PGTM testing on her embryos. It would have cut the number of embryos we could use in half. And then I later found out that they needed to be able to test the sperm source as well in order to do PGTM testing. So it kind of wasn't even an option.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I put it out there on Instagram, because I had a pretty big following by that point, that I was looking for another egg donor. And a friend of a friend connected me to her friend that had been kind of talking about doing egg donation, but wasn't sure if she was too old. She was 34 and she lived in the States, not far from one of my fertility clinic locations. So that was mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. And we kind of chatted and we both were super excited about the idea. We got along really well and just connected really fast, and it felt really good. And so I decided to try to use her as my egg donor instead. Moved on to doing like the testing. Of course, I wanted to do the genetic testing right away because my first donor had failed it. So
right.
I thought, just get that part out of the way before like we even decide if this is feasible.
Makes sense.
So her genetic testing came back good and we were both really happy and excited. She literally told me she was 100% in on doing this, because I was getting a little bit worried as we got closer and closer to STEM starting.
Right.
We were about a week away at that point.
Okay.
From her maybe starting the next cycle. But there was a little issue with her not wanting to go on birth control. So she had had bad reactions to it in the past, where she just didn't like what it did to like her mental health and her body. And so the fertility clinic really wanted her to go on it, because all of their donor cycles start with birth control and she didn't want to. So I had reached out to the clinic and said, you know, she's kind of worried about birth control because of this reason. And they actually emailed her and said, if you've had issues with birth control, you should maybe reconsider being an egg donor, because stims are just like more hormones and you might feel terrible on those as well. And so instead of like actually giving her medical information, they said, maybe do some research on the medication. So she went down the Google and the Reddit
rabbit hole
and started just reading about all the terrible times that people had had with IVF.
Oh, God.
Really scared. And so she decided to back out from donating.
Oh, my God. So when was this?
So this was a week before we were due to start. So this was at the end of March. So just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, my gosh. So how do you react to that?
I mean, I just couldn't believe this was my second egg donor and now she was backing out. So this was like two failed egg donors.
Oh, and I'm so sorry.
I just didn't think it was even possible to find a third person. Like at this point, I'd been so lucky to even find these two unicorns that were willing to donate their eggs to me.
Right.
And how would I ever find another person? And I think too, I got really attached to her. I just thought she was this wonderful person. She was exactly what I was looking for, like exactly the kind of person that I'd want my child to meet in the future. And so that part was just really hard.
Yes. So, were you angry at all?
I was really angry. I think
I feel like
it's hard when you don't have a choice to go through IVF. Like at that point, I'd been through 7 rounds of IVF. So to have someone be like, oh, I'm nervous about doing IVF and I have the choice, so I'm going to back out. I was like, this is just so unfair. Like, I don't want to do IVF. I didn't have a choice those 7 rounds that I did.
Right.
How come you get to back out and you have your two children and your wonderful, perfect family?
Right.
And I've already accepted so many things. Like, I accepted doing this on my own.
Right.
Okay, fine. I'll do it anyways. I accepted, okay, I can't use my own eggs. Fine. I'll do it anyways. Moved on to egg donor and still I can't make it happen. So it was really frustrating.
Absolutely. So then have you talked to her since she backed out?
I mean,
or like,
so
How do you deal with that relationship? Because I, you know, you get it. You don't want to make someone do something they don't want to do, but you've already put so much into it financially and emotionally.
Yeah.
And
so like I understood she was just protecting her mental health and her family. She didn't want to put her kids through something if it was going to affect her badly. I understood on a logical level, but emotionally I was just, I felt like you are the reason I cannot have a second baby now.
Oh. So
I personally.
Sure.
And so then I just started like thinking, well, what can I do? I had one really rough night where I was like, well, I'm just going to do another egg retrieval. Like if somebody won't do it for me, I'm just going to do it myself, which I then later realized is probably just a huge waste of money and time. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to set me back more.
Right.
So I had a few other people that had offered to donate eggs. Again, like I'm so lucky that I have this huge social media following and, and can reach so many people that way. And so I started looking into that. There were a few options that like I didn't really want to pursue and I felt kind of hesitant about. But I think I found a girl that I'm going to try to move forward with. My thing now is like, what order do you do this in? Like, maybe I should have done the counseling session with the therapist for the last donor first instead of genetic testing. But I was so worried about her failing the genetic testing that I thought we should do that part first. So it's just impossible to like... What order do you do this in?
How much do you have to space those things out?
I mean, you don't necessarily have to space things out, but it's just about the different costs. So like I could do the therapy appointment first, but if she fails the genetic testing after that, then that's a waste of money. Or if
100%
does the genetic counseling first, but then backs out because she hasn't had the counseling, then that's even more money that you've wasted on the genetic test. So there's just
no
way to go about it.
Yes. It's so interesting to think about that, you know, and again, it's like one of those things you don't think about it unless you're in that world.
Yeah. And the clinic situation doesn't do any counseling for known donors. So the fact that they were like, oh, maybe you should reconsider. I'm like, then provide her with some information, like at least, you know, tell her here's what it's going to be like, or here's what we assume it's going to be like. So that part's frustrating that like the clinic doesn't have a process for known egg donors that's really thorough.
Right. So are you still kind of in the trying to decide phase right now?
Yeah, I am. So I just reached out to the clinic and said, I might have this third egg donor. Let's kind of start the process. Again, it takes like a good 2 months to get through all of the testing and everything. So I think we'll just see what happens. And then I'm exploring a few other options as well. Like I've looked at just doing the traditional egg bank, but I'm so scared. I mean, one, I can't afford a lot of them because they're $30,000 to $90,000 for like six eggs. It's insane. And then you get six frozen eggs. And in my experience, I'm just, that could not end up in a baby.
Right.
So that's scary.
There's so many unknowns.
There's so many unknowns.
Yeah. Wow. Well,
yeah.
I can't thank you enough for being so transparent about all of it, because I think that, you know, even though I've done so many of these episodes and, you know, I feel like you've uncovered some info that I didn't think about before or that I didn't know. So I'm hoping that, you know, people listening are learning some more things about this process as well. And, you know, we'll continue to follow along as, you know, you go through your journey and we'll have to do a part two and see what happened next.
Positive part two eventually one day.
Absolutely. But I would love to ask you, Kristen, before we wrap, you know, going into this single mom by choice life, what do you know now that you didn't know when you were first starting out that you'd love to impart to people who are listening, who might be considering it?
I love this question because I think, and I keep reminding myself of this fact now that I'm using an egg donor as well as a sperm donor. But when I picked my sperm donor, that choice felt like it was so important. Like it really matters who I choose. And yes, it might matter in terms of like my child meeting them down the road or whatever. But once you have that baby in your arms, you're going to love them so much, no matter who that donor is. So I would just say, if you're on this path, whether you're a single mom by choice or you're having to use a sperm donor or an egg donor for another reason, I think in the end, it doesn't really matter who the donor is, because you're going to love that baby and that baby's going to be perfect to you. And you're going to feel like everything worked out the way that it was supposed to. So knowing that, I keep reminding myself that as these egg donors have fallen through and I've had to like revise my idea of like, well, now I'm going to use this donor, now I'm going to use that donor. In the end, it's going to feel like it all just happened the way that it was meant to. And it's going to be the perfect baby that I've always wanted.
Thank you guys so much for listening. And thanks again to Kristen for sharing her story, for helping normalize the conversation around all this stuff. Don't forget to check out Fertility Rally. We are happy to support you no matter what you're going through. And also check out Work of Art, my book, which can be found on my website, which is infertileafgroup.com. Also, if you can follow us on Instagram at InfertileAF Stories and Fertility Rally, that would be amazing. And finally, if you enjoy this podcast and want to share it with anybody else who might benefit from it, please do. My goal is to just reach as many people as possible and help whatever people are going through suck less. So thanks for listening. I will talk to you guys next time.